Like to welcome the man, the myth, the legend, Jeff York, to the Coach's Edge podcast. We're diving into the 1-1-3 defense. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard that correctly. The 1-1-3. It's been great to get to know Jeff over the past few years. Started out sending his boys, who are now college athletes, to some of our camps, and him coaching my youngest brother Micah a little bit and getting to know each other. And so it's always cool when business becomes friendship, and that's what this has been. And I'd say probably the last, I don't know how many months. I mean, there's probably a text that we have at least every 2 weeks. There's a text between you and I, or a group text about some random thing with basketball, which I've enjoyed, and it's been good to get to know you. But specifically on the 1-3-1, this is going to be very beneficial for a lot of coaches out there who are looking for something different. For looking for something that's still very effective, and there's not a whole lot out in the world on the 1-1-3 defense. So, Jeff, welcome to the Coach's Edge.
Thank you. Happy to be here with you again.
We were talking about your experience. You've coached at the girls' level, you coached at the boys' level, you coached against me back in the day, which, I mean, you must be really old because I feel like I'm getting old. When you were playing and not playing, coaching at Flint Hamady, powerhouse there. You've been an official, a longtime official. And so, anytime that we get someone on who's, really diehard into basketball and has a ton of experiences, it's going to be very, very beneficial. But before we dig into our first question, what's your player comp of a, a former or current basketball player? How would you describe your game?
As myself,
Yeah.
I was not a very good athlete. I think I learned a lot about coaching from sitting on the bench, to be honest with you. I made the basketball team my freshman year. When I grew up, we didn't have junior high sports. So we had 26 freshmen go out for freshman basketball, I think, and our coach kept 15. I was one of those 15. I found out after high school because he was my JV coach. He kept me because he liked my dad and figured out I wouldn't complain if I sat on the bench. It was one of those 14 or 15. And then I'm pretty sure my junior year I made the team because a weird circumstance. I'm pretty sure the coach forgot about somebody else and I was the last one to made it. So I got to have four different coaches in 4 years of high school. I learned quite a bit. In my senior year, my basketball coach at that time, who ended up I coached with at Hamady when he went there, said, "Why don't you come coach a freshman with me next year? You seem like you got that kind of mindset and you understand stuff." And so at that time, I wanted to be a beat writer for the Pistons. And I said, okay, I'll start coaching a little bit. And it ended up taking me an education role. And I've been some role of basketball since.
So superintendent.
But basketball playing wise, not good.
So the,
Form wise, shooting, not good.
somewhere, the consummate team player, the bench player who just knows the game and around the game, that's you, which I like, and tons of experience coaching wise. You mentioned the 1-1-3. I was talking about one of our coaches, edge members in Ohio, runs a really good 1-1-3 defense. You've run this as well. Why the 1-1-3? Why is it effective?
For me, I'm always concerned about rebounding. And at least I have a ch I think with this matchup 1-1-3, I'm always going to have multiple people on the weak side when a shot goes up if we do it right. The other reason I like a 1-1-3 is I get anxious coaching when there's wherever my pickup point is, I don't have somebody pressuring the ball. No matter what kind of, whether it's right in your face pressure or enough where they just can't look, I don't like giving people free looks at the basket. So by starting in a 1-1-3, if they have a one person alignment or they have a two guard alignment, I can always pop somebody out there on the ball to start with. So that's really the initial start to it.
Those are the two main focus points for you: rebounding and ball pressure. This defense provides those two things as well. Are there any other, main goals that you try to get out of this defense?
There's a couple. I feel like I can run this and run it to my man-to-man principles. So I like man-to-man the most, but I can run this and run most of my man-to-man rules, which generally revolve around, I sometimes think we get mixed up on defense. I would rather wish we could call everything ball defense because everything's dictated by the ball. But I like keeping the ball on the side of the floor once it gets there. And the farther the side of the ball gets to the side of the floor, I feel more comfortable because they're not reversing it. I don't want it in the middle. I don't want it reversed real easy. And it also goes right along with, if I can narrow down the floor and I have to help, it almost rotates into a trap. Mm-hmm. And if I want to extend this into a trapping defense or make it a half court trapping defense, I can follow the same rules man to man as I can follow with zone.
Mm. So some of the rotations and being able to trap, I like that. We're going to get into that further into the episode. But okay, let's paint the picture here. As far as the defense itself, obviously coaches may be listening, be like 1-1-3. I mean, if you got one up top, both wings are going to be wide open. You know, what break down the locations of the defensive players and then some of the base rotations.
Okay. I'll say very basically, it looks like your basic 2-3 zone, only I staggered the two guards. So I got one up above the top of the key, one, for lack of better terms, free throw line, keeping the ball out of anything at the high post if somebody's there or Flash is there. Now, you have to know who you're playing. So as the game's evolved, those bottom guys, the forwards, traditionally they were called, they might have to creep up a little bit more because you're seeing a lot more teams with multiple shooters shooting more threes than they used to. So that stretches things out a little bit more than when I used to run this a lot. But basically, you got – and I like to play as high as I can. So – with my forwards and center. So if there's nobody really low, I just keep bumping, creeping people up. And that allows my forwards to get to wings and help more, for lack of better terms. So I'll play as high as I can. If they stretch the floor out, you know what I mean? Like they start somebody in the short corner, they start a couple guys below the block or in the corners, and then we have to really work on communicating and getting to spots.
So let's say a team goes, well, first off, do you think this defense is effective and you can tweak it, say, hey, our focus, even though we're playing a 1-1-3, is focused on protecting the paint? And then maybe you play a team the next game and they got a bunch of shooters. Say, hey, you know what? We can still play the 1-1-3, but our focus is going to be getting out on the perimeter. Do you think this is a good defense to tweak to both those areas, or it has a specific strength in one or the other?
No, I think it can do both of those. And I'm a big breakdown drill guy. I think coaches are good about it on offense. They're not always good about it on defense. Mm. I do it on defense a lot, probably because especially my senior year, that coach was a defensive coach. So to get kind of more what you're saying, if they're more a perimeter team, I'm going to gauge those breakdown drills more according to the skills that I'm playing. So it might be more perimeter. We know we have to rotate quicker from this spot. So we know we have to expect the drive from this spot to there. And that's how we have to move and help each other and talk. So yeah, there's my adjustments would be in my breakdown drills and practice according to the teams that we're playing. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I dead front low post, you know, which sometimes can leave you vulnerable for lobs, but that's why I like pressure on the ball. Cause I think it's harder to throw in the low post if you put pressure on the ball. I don't understand teams that don't pressure the ball and front low post. I think you're just very vulnerable, but I watch a lot of teams do it with success. That's just not me. The biggest vulnerability I have with this defense, no matter how I do it and how I've run it, is if the ball starts at the wing and they drive towards, let's say, the block, I got to get better when I run this about running drills about guys kicking to the corner and us getting out there. Cause I put so much pressure on driving to the block and trapping. A lot of times they'll slip somebody from behind on that mm-hmm. top side and they're wide open because I put so much pressure on forcing it down to the baseline in the corner that's where the easy slip comes in sometimes.
So you're focused on when the ball does go to the wing, you're not letting that dribble drive get back to the elbow, to the middle of the court. You're really trying to.
I always want somebody to take one of the elbow, the low post. If you get beat, I want you getting beat to the corner. Ideally, I'd like you to force them towards the corner. So now I got a sideline and a baseline. Mm-hmm. The ideal spot's in the corner for them to have the ball on defense. But I don't want them driving up top easy. If they get up top, it's got to be way closer to the half court line so everybody can adjust. I don't want it in the high post. I don't want it in the low post. I want it out of the paint.
Gotcha. So let's talk rotations. Let's say a team is in a 3-out, 2-in. Or maybe a 5-out. So they still have those 3 out and then they got players in each corner. What's some of the rotation? Player brings it down. They pass the basketball to the wing. And, you know, this is probably some of the bigger rotation pieces. I think coaches, if they're familiar with a 2-3 zone, may, you know, find the back three a little easier to coach with some things they're familiar with. But those two players and more of that I formation up top, how do you teach those rotations? What are the keys?
Biggest thing is starts with the ball pressure, wherever I pick up point is. Some of that has to do with how good a ball handler the point guard is. But let's say you got a solid ball handler. My top guy in defense is taking him, and we don't want to get beat off the dribble in the center third of the floor, like that key width extended. We want to encourage him to get to the side, whether it's a dribble or a pass. If it's passed out to the wing, that second guard's going to go take that, and then he's going to play, I used to say, top foot above their top foot, so it's very difficult for them to go back up top. Now I put their nose on their shoulder, and I got that from my son who played at Madonna for a while. Obviously, Madonna does things pretty well. That seemed to make maybe a little bit easier teaching point to me reference-wise, so you're not thinking about feet as much. But I want, when the ball gets to the wing, that guard that jumped out to take it to encourage him to go down. My top guard that was guarding the ball, he's going to go down in that elbow area to try to keep the ball out of the high post. The reverse pass up top should be harder because we're playing that wing guy with a little bit more pressure to go towards the corner and towards the baseline. We just don't want to direct drive that way. And then on the weak side or the help side, depending on what you want to call it, that offside forward, he's got to help with lobbing the post, but he's responsible for some kind of longer pass to the other wing, to the other corner.
So you're continuing to rotate the top two players. Ball goes to the wing. Player at the high post goes out to guard the wing. Again, they're trying to force down, nose on the shoulder. Player who is pressuring the ball on the top, they drop down to the high post. Ball gets, maybe there's some type of, you know, cross or pass and cut away. You got a player who comes back up top. Ball goes back up top. Player on the low post bumps back up, guards the player up top again. Player who was on the wing goes back to the high post, correct?
Right. Yep.
So basically,
on a dribble entry, that guy that had the ball to the start, because a lot of times people a dribble entry and loop that wing out top or cut him through, the guy that was on the ball keeps it.
Keeps it.
The guards are working in tandem together that way.
Mm-hmm. Skip pass wing to the other wing. You have your, as you mentioned, player on the bottom of the three. They're coming up to take that. And then does the player on the low post, they push him down like a traditional 2-3?
Yeah, so like that weak side forward out took the skip pass. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Yep. And then they're going to do what kind of the guard would have done on the other side, kind of encourage them to go down. The center, I'll call him, for lack of better terms. They'll cover any low, they'll front any low post. I got my other side forward moving over now. What's probably going to happen is now my weak side guard, he's going to drop down and be that weak side rebounder, pick up man, call cutters, because he's going to see the stuff from the other side of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I covered that good enough.
So the ball gets, well, we'll keep painting this picture. So the ball gets swung or a skip pass from, let's say, wing to wing or from one side to the other side. You have the bottom player on the three. They're coming up. That'd be one of your forwards generally, right? And they're trying to push them back down to the sideline. And then from that location, you have a player who's at the high post. If that ball's still on the wing, they're going to bump the person in the bottom row down anyway, right?
Right.
And then the weak side guard who was guarding the opposite wing on that skip pass, they have some different responsibilities. They need to be able to drop down and guard the paint, but they're all obviously going to have to fill up, right? Because if you skip pass and then go right back to the top of the key, that's going to be an open three, right?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Got the basic rotations right there. Are you also denying the high post?
I try to as much as I can. I know a lot of coaches give up high post shots because I think that's a difficult shot. I don't like the ball on the high post. I think it's too easy to pass from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, people could hit that 15-footer, but I think it's easy. You got too many options when the ball's in the middle of the floor at the high post. So usually my opposite guard, usually I have a guard who's trying to dig and take away the pass in the high post. If it's movement really quick from the top, sometimes that center guy will have to come up and help and not front it until a guard can dig down and make it go back out.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's one of the reasons I like the mid-range pull-up, specifically driving to the middle, is because of the passing options that it opens up out of it. You know, like just being able to get that ball, whether it's with a pass or whether it's a dribble drive into the middle of the court, multiple players are going to have to guard one. Boom, you can get the basketball out and really pass it to every single location on the court compared to some different spots is big. What about extending the defense? It's one thing to pressure the ball, right, with that one, but does this defense allow you to, you know, get into like a pressure into a half court trap, things of that nature where you want to keep this defense, but say it's the fourth quarter, you know, you're down five, there's 2 minutes to go.
No, I think it does pretty naturally because I like trapped on the side of the floor. You know, part of the reason why, like, if somebody gets beat off the dribble just in that basic 1-1-3, it kind of turned the help can turn into a trap naturally because you're helping so hard, guys are rotating. Is all I do is extend that out. Now you have to know you can't commit yourself too quick. Like if you extend your defense, you can't come flying up out of nowhere, commit yourself too quick for easy passes. But it almost naturally turns into a run and jump on the sides.
Okay.
Which ironically is kind of what my coach at Flint Hamity did when he would play you guys. I mean, I think you said before that was just relentless. Somebody was always coming from somewhere. Mm-hmm. He did it more out of a man-to-man set, but it's the same basic concept. Balls gets pushed up the side. We get you – at that time, it was more like half-court area. We're going to jump you. Mm-hmm. We're going to make you pick up the ball. We're going to make you reverse it backwards and not going to give you any easy looks to the middle. So this 1-1-3, I can just extend out. It's almost like a diamond. You know, some people, coaches that run a diamond want the ball out of the middle, push the ball to the side, except I don't like to jump passes as much. I like to force dribbles and jump and trap dribbles.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. You have a little more, you can dictate a little bit better because of, you know, where you're funneling. If you got a good defender on the ball, if teams see you doing that, they say, okay, that's fine. We're going to go a two guard front on this. How do you extend if you choose with a two guard front, and then how do you rotate?
Again, that goes a little bit scouting report. If I know one of those two guards isn't as good a shooter, then I don't feel quite as bad about getting to that second guy later, you know, because they're working in tandem on top. If they're both good shooters, then I'm probably going to have a vulnerability, which you would on any defense, right? So I probably have to have the second guard in the tandem move up a little bit higher. And then my forwards are going to have more pressure on them from behind, talking about coming out and helping out the wings. I'm talking about the wings and the corners. And I think my high school coach used to call it in his diamond press an interceptor, but that back guy is like a quarterback or a defensive back. And well, not at Flint Hamity, but the other schools I've coached at are football schools. So I use a lot of defensive football terminology. Like you're the cornerback, you're reading plays, you're reading passes, you're ready for that because those top guys are extended more than we'd normally like. So you really got to be ready to help out at your spots so they can get back and recover and put us back in the more natural positions.
I can see a lot of teams going with a 2-1-2 to try to attack this. A lot of teams go to a 2-1-2 when it's like a 1-3-1. But by having that back defender in the zone, if you go 2-1-2, okay, maybe they got two really good shooter ball handlers up top. And so even though you're in the 1-1-3, you're really guarding three players because you have a player at the high post. Right. But technically, you have that player behind in the zone. And if they're going wide with the 2-1-2, that player in the bottom is able to step up a little bit.
Yep. Which you would kind of like I talked before, they can help. They don't want the ball to get over their head. They don't want to be vulnerable right in the center underneath the hoop. But they can go up and at least slow down that high post guy. My forwards then that were out on the wings got to help dive down a little bit towards a post and play in the middle until a guard can help them. I kind of call it a matchup because sometimes it morphs into a 1-2-2 or a 2-3 where they match up more with them. Mm-hmm. So that's where the communication comes important. It's really about where the ball is on the floor as much as it is sometimes your initial alignment of a 1-1-3. So if they do something like that, like a two-guard front, it might morph into looking more like a 2-3 zone just because we've matched up closer to where guys are. The key is for us, we want it to the side of the floor and then hopefully to the corner of the floor. And we just adjust our alignment to get it there. And then everybody's got a man or they're getting ready to help on a dribble drive if they have to, mm-hmm. or we're trapping out of it. So we kind of morph and match up that way.
What about an overload? So let's say it's a two, you know, paint the picture of your alignment and your locations. Team has a two guard front. They got a player in the, let's say the ball's on the right side of the court, but it's two guard front. They got a player on the left seam, maybe possibly area. You got a player at the high post. Ball's on the right side of the court. We got a player in the right corner. And then we got a player on the our fifth player. They're going to be, say, overloading the low post. So maybe they're in the short corner. Maybe they're in the block. What are the, you know, rotations and locations of your defender teams overload?
So we got a guy on the ball. My bottom forward on that right side, it would be left side on defense, on the ball side, he's going to kind of play in a halfway point. So I think if you pressure the ball, a pass directly to the short corner by that forward is going to be difficult, at least not without it getting kicked out of bounds. That forward there that's kind of in front of the short corner, for lack of better terms, is also a step away from getting out to the corner and taking that, which moves our center over, which moves our other forward over, which moves our backside down. And then we also had, you know, the one guard and the guard up top and the weak side guard until the ball goes down, he's helping take the ball away from the high post elbow area. Did I kind of paint that picture?
Yeah. And the player who I'm assuming, because I'm just, again, it's all about how would I attack?
Right.
You reverse engineer everything. It's like, all right, well, okay. What if I put my shooter at the high post? I put my big out in the two guard front and then I run him down and they set a screen on the defender at the high post, and now we flip it back and we got a wide open catch and shoot three. Does
that gets back to my, I would say another vulnerability is, like I said, my forwards, I try to play as high as possible. So that screen is a little bit harder. I'd like to think I can get over top of that screen better. Where that does lead to vulnerability is weak side rebounding. Sometimes I got them kind of cheating up so high that now they've given up that positioning to help with the skip pass. That some kind of shot, quick shot's gonna, we're gonna be on the outside of that guy. So we're gonna give that up. So that there is some give and take there with that. But I think that skip pass gets harder with more pressure on the ball. As the game proceeds and as my scouting part goes, I really wanna know who to put pressure on the ball for so we can not make those passes as easy. Most of these coaches along here won't know it. This defense would have a hard time against my older son. Because my older son will pick you apart driving and kicking to somebody because he's strong enough to make that pass. We'd have to make him dribble with his right hand because he's left-handed, and he would struggle a little bit more. But that's when the scouting part really comes. Which guys do I got to know when to pressure when? Which shooters do I got to know when to get out to quicker and lessen my vulnerabilities that way?
Right. And so that person guarding, you know, if they're overloading, that other guard is at the high post. He or she has to be just very careful not to get sealed and pinned on the low side. You already got a defender who's closer to the rim to protect. If the ball does happen to get there, they got to make sure they can get back out.
And I think that's very important for those back guys to tell them where those screens are coming so they can look for them. On some of the stuff I sent you, you know, it's like every other thing said communicate. I know we all said we don't communicate enough. It's another reason why you got to communicate. Those back guys, to me, even though the top guys might be starting out with the most pressure, the guards and the whoever's guarding the top guys or the wings, those back guys telling everybody where the cutters are going, where the screens are coming from is more important, especially now that we're doing more ball screens, even against zones and matchup zones. I think that communication is going to be really even more important than it was before.
You mentioned ball screens. I was going to get to that later, but let's do it now. You know, how have you defended the ball screen using this defense?
Again, hopefully I've got enough of my scouting report. I like to blow them up. So what I mean by that is just beat it to a spot so the screen's not effective and make them – if I know a ball screen's coming and I can jump it, I'm going to jump it so they go to that sideline that I'm talking about. So the ball screen is less effective because they're not going to be able to dribble that way. Now, did my forward on that side have to be aware that, okay, they're blowing up that screen, so he might be more vulnerable to a direct drive basket? They certainly do. But I try to blow up that screen before it gets there because I already want him on that side. If it's a decent enough screen or it's high enough and he can get over top of that ball screen, let's say it went just off the left key or something, left elbow, and that ball screen's coming back, then I want my other guard to try to read it and jump it and maybe even trap that. So it's like a hard hedge or he'll take it and force him back to where he came from because my defense is already overplayed that way. But we don't want him to be able to get around directly over, whether it's a screen or where they dribble the top, real easy to go to the other side because our defense is overplayed enough that we know we're going to be vulnerable on a reverse. I think you muted yourself.
So let me make sure I have this correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong. So if the ball is on the wing, we're trying to keep it on the wing, just like we were if there was no ball screen, right?
Right.
Which almost ice it, like you said, nose on the shoulder. If the screen is a little bit higher, we can jump it, we can trap it, or you already have a player down there, you can just switch it.
Right.
Okay. So those are your three main. Are there any other things that you use with the ball screen? Are those the big three?
Those are the big three.
Okay, cool. Personnel. I want to touch on the personnel. If you know, let's assume you have a player who maybe you're trying to hide a little bit defensively, right? A little slower, you know, not as talented. You have a couple good athletes on your team, different sizes. What do you do as far as locations of the court to get the most out of this defense and where these guys are at or girls are at?
Depending on the position, let's say you're in foul trouble and you're hiding. I don't want to say hide a guy, but protecting them is probably a better term. Like you said, if it's a guard, I like him to be the top guard because unless they dribble entry, that's probably going to be started with a pass. And now they're in a help position more where the other guard is going to put the most pressure on the ball at the wing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a bigger guy, I put him in the middle. And I say that because I like the dead front low post. So well, I'll call it traditionally.
I want to rewind one thing. I think this is big. So you're saying with this, like if you had a better defender out of those two, you're going to put that better defensive player in that second spot in the middle. Because
are you talking about the guards?
On the guards, yeah. Because that when that ball goes to the wing, they're going to be the one to jump out.
If all things are equal, like nobody's in foul trouble, okay, there's nobody vulnerable, I want my best ball handler on the ball to start with, because that makes the entry pass
tough. Defender at the top. Okay, gotcha.
If they're in foul trouble or something, then I might put them on the top one because they might not put as much pressure on, encourage the side pass to the side. I'll let the other defender go take it at the wing. Then he can drop to the elbow and be more of a help spot than putting pressure on the ball.
Okay.
Does that make more sense?
Yeah, so it really could be either or. I mean, gotcha.
And then if we're just talking vulnerability, knowing your scouting report, I would like them to go to their left because I think most teams are weaker ball handler going to the left, which means my best forward-type rebounder I put on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So I got them in a position to rebound because the shots are probably going to come up from the left side. The rebounds are probably going to go to the other side. So that's where I try to put them. If I have somebody in foul trouble, I'll put them like in the traditional five spot in the middle of those bottom three, because if the ball gets to the wing, they're going to be dead front in the low post. And hopefully it's not as much of a war banging back and forth and not knowing what referee Jeff's going to call in the post on a foul and get him in foul trouble. They're dead fronting them. So they're less likely to get a foul, I think, unless they got a help from that spot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What are some of the variations of this defense that you would use if you want to trap the basketball?
I think it's easy to move it to more like a 1-2-2 look to start. So for lack of better terms, I'd move the second guy to a wing or between the elbow and the wing. I'd move a forward up between the elbow and the wing and then stagger the bottom two guys at each post and make it look like a 1-2-2. Mm-hmm. But then all our rules are the same. It's just an alignment. So if the ball goes to the wing, the guy that was at the elbow is going to take it. The top guy is going to drop down. The weak side elbow guy would drop down to the forward spot. So that, to me, is an easy shift. I've actually run it both ways out of that. Some of that's my personnel. Some of that's who I'm playing against. Some of that's their alignments. That's probably the easiest way. I've never been able to do this out of 1-3-1. But some of that's probably my personal bias because I struggle with 1-3-1 because I think it's so hard to rebound out of.
Hmm. Are there any other different rotations that you've used with this defense?
No, not so much. Rotations, no. Emphasis is where it usually comes to. And like I said, that's my breakdown drills. I'll break down stuff depending on what I think the other team's going to do or where our need. I'll change those drills. Like I like a lot of 7-on-5, 8-on-5 drills with it when I got 5 on defense. I'll split the side in half and I'll go 5-on-3. So like the forwards and the guard really got to talk. Cause there's always vulnerabilities on passes, does that forward come up and get it? Or does that guard go out and take it?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put a lot of pressure on the defense by overloading that side and drill. So they really got to talk about who they know has got the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay if they both have it.
Right.
It's a matter if they, I'd rather have them both have it and then one have to back off than nobody have it. And that comes from doing those breakdown drills and talking during practices.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I change the rotations as much as I change the emphasis on who gets what where.
So, and again, it's that to me is similar to a 2-3. It's like, boy, if that ball goes to the wing, you know, you got to come up from the baseline and we're going to take it. And if we're doing a good job, that's going to be a split second. Like when I was coaching in Perrysburg, we would have our wing guy guard for a split second the wing, and he was also responsible for the corner. And then we would bump the player who was at the elbow out to guard the wing. And we didn't put a big in the middle. We put a guard in the middle, very similar to what you do at the 1-1-3, right? You have two guards playing the top and the high post. That's the same thing we did with our 1-3-1. We had two guards playing the top. And so wing comes out quickly, stops the ball, takes away shot, and then they just sprint to the corner with their hand in the passing lane. And that's right. All the time that we gave our guard who was at the high post, say, hey, they're going to take away the initial shot. They're going to give them to hold the basketball and think for a second, but that's not their responsibility after that. They're sprinting to guard the corner because we don't want to give that boom, boom, open three. That's the amount of time that you have to come and take that spot away. And if you're in the middle and you get out to the player who has the basketball on the wing even earlier, good. That just made life a heck of a lot easier for all of us.
Yeah, it's very much like a 2-3, and you just stagger those top two guys in some way. But it's to me about knowing who gets to what spot, what's your advantage and your alignment to start with to allow you to get to the spots to take away the offense, their concepts, and what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk transition. Do you feel like this is a defense that allows you to easily get back and recover?
I do. Again, it's knowing your personnel. You know, if you have the old Syracuse teams that were all 6'7" to 7 foot, it's real easy for any of those five to play those spots. So once in a while, you might have a team where you got shorter guards where you want to keep on top and forwards. But when you drill enough and you know the principles, even though you're a guy that normally plays in that top one of those two guard spots, if somebody else is taking the ball in transition and you're the guy farther back, you're going to know what to do from those spots because we've drilled stuff enough. Mm-hmm. Until the other guys get back. So I think transition wise, it's fine. It's matching up, you know, it's mm-hmm. matching up and knowing your rules as much as it is knowing I got this spot. I got to do this all the time. Well, you might be in a different spot for a little bit until you get help. So I think it matches transition pretty well.
Do you feel like this defense complements a certain style of offense?
You know, I would say, now that you say it that way and think about it, there are teams that I used to run like a structured fast break, like Roy Williams just run that T fast break where you had a trailing big man taking the ball out of bounds. Works out pretty well with that because when you transition back, those forwards are already back.
Mm-hmm.
I used to run diamond presses. So now I'm talking through 25 or so years ago, making me sound old. But I always put the big people up front of the diamond press because their length mm-hmm. in high school, because a lot of times you don't have a whole lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
I would get in trouble in transition because I would want those guys to be the back guys when we went back in the half-court defense. So looking back at it, there probably was a little bit there of transition vulnerabilities, probably lack of better term.
Mm-hmm.
But if I run the trailing big man offense and run some screen stuff through, then they're already back there. So
right.
Those probably work compatibly better together.
Yeah. So as far as if you were to press, do you think that this specific 1-1-3 defense, if you want to go full court, what's a press that would complement getting back into the 1-1-3?
You know, I would probably run a diamond.
Okay.
I would just move my forwards up. So they're already kind of three quarters of the way there. But depending on my team, if they're similar in length, similar in speed, it might be a 1-1-3 alignment, but I put the five where the one was, for lack of a better term. So the five's on the ball in the full court press, and the one goes back. So then I have that length up front, pushing them into the sides. And then if it gets across half court or out of a trapping area, full court press, if we get a chance to talk and switch back, fine. If not, we get through that possession that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you mentioned the diamond a couple different times. Some of that is, again, as always comes back to your personnel, right? If you got a little more flexibility, you can run any kind of defense and it's probably going to be really good, right? But so if you're a little more conservative with a diamond press back into a 1-1-3, you put your guard up top, probably the bigger of the two guards up top, your wings are up. And as you get back and you don't break the press or you don't get a turnover, those wings are just, they're filling back like they would on the 1-1-3. You're pretty much already set up, but you want to put a little more size up front. It's going to be a little more work, especially for the big, I would think. They can go up front. You put your smaller guard back, and essentially those are really the only two guys, right, that are going to have to, essentially, when you get into the half court, flip locations.
Right. Yep. And I would say I've done that different with girls and boys. I'll be more likely to put my, if I'm coaching girls, put my big girls up front, because girls can't usually throw inbounds passes on the press past half court line. So I can flood with a lot of size, and especially if they're athletic size up front, it makes it very difficult for most high school girls teams because they can't stretch the floor like a boys team can. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So boys teams, I might do it a little bit different. Again, it's knowing your personnel.
Right, right. Any other, you know, tidbits for a coach and you think, boy, this is one thing that I didn't ask you, but specific to the 1-1-3 defense that they would want to know?
Biggest thing I would say is just trying something where you can be consistent in your expectations and your rules. I'm a rule guy, probably why I referee some, probably why I'm a school administrator is I try to be a rule guy, but I think it's easier for your kids if your rules are consistent. Like my rules, no matter what I do, I try to get the ball to the side of the floor. I try to encourage you to go to the corner. If you got to help, I want you to help quick. If it turns into a trap, big deal, because we want to be aggressive. I think you got to do something that matches your personality. Like I don't know how some teams can be aggressive on offense and not be aggressive on defense. And some teams are aggressive on defense and not aggressive on offense. To me, I think that's got to match up. And I think this defense allows me to be true to my personality, what I want my teams to look like. I want to be aggressive, and maybe assertive is a better word. All sides of the ball, offense, defense, special teams, for lack of better terms, taking the ball out of bounds. I think this allows me to do that because the rules are consistent no matter what alignment I'm in.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned high emphasis on ball pressure, trying to keep it on a side, trying to push down to the corner towards the baseline. If you wanted to, you know, get into any type of denial of the passes, you know, what are some of the rotations that you've used? Like if you ever jumped it instead of like, instead of trapping so much, I know you mentioned that was like a preference. Do you think like, hey, you know what, we're just going to try to take away certain passes like you do fronting post?
One of the things I like to do is if I'm not in the trapping defense and I can get them to dribble from like the wing to the corner, that person who's guarding the person with the ball in the corner has like both their feet painted to the corner. So they can hopefully take away the sideline and the baseline on a drive from there. That allows my guard to deny a pass out top back out to the wing. That allows my opposite guard to help take away a pass to the elbow. I'm already dead fronting a post area, and my weak side forward's got a rebound on a wild shot, has got help side on a skip pass, and he can kind of direct people where to go. So that's one of my big cutoff spots is right there. If I can get the ball in the corner and one guy guard the guy in the corner, I think the other team's sunk because we're kind of trapping with one guy because we got the sideline and the baseline. So that would be that. When it gets there, I don't want return passes. I don't want return pass to the wing. I don't want return pass to the elbow. It certainly shouldn't get in the low post.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The ball goes to the corner, and now let's say you decide to trap it, right? So guard comes down, the bottom player is there, you're trapping the corner. What are the general rotations for being able to, you know, pick that next pass?
So if the guard pushed him to the four to the corner and the forward moved out.
So even if the ball was on the wing and then they threw it to the corner, and now you're going to get it. You're taking your
if
defender
the
on
ball the ball got wing, passed to the corner. I guess I could do this at a scouting report. Some I've done a little bit. So the guard followed him down, they trapped it. The opposite guard would take away a pass to the wing if there's somebody out there. My center's dead fronting the post. My weak side forward's gonna have to help with passes to the elbow. So they're the one reading it, they're the one overplaying it. And then in theory, it should be a very difficult pass to the other side of the floor out of that. And if they do, it's gonna be something with an arc. My forward can recover, my center can rotate back over, and then we adjust from there.
Gotcha. Perfect. Jeff, this has been great. This has been awesome. Very informative. I appreciate you painting a picture of, you know, the defense and some of the rotations and some of the locations that you would be ultra aggressive, whether that's trapping or extending or ball screen situations and things of that nature, dribble throughs, so on and so forth. If anybody has any questions for you, I'll put, you know, your contact information below. Any closing thoughts?
No, I just appreciate people taking the time to listen to an old guy talk a little bit. It's interesting walking through this again because the game changes so much. You know, when I first ran a lot of this stuff, this is all basic Don Meyer principles from when I first started. But the game's changed enough where it's so spread out. It's interesting to see how I've adjusted my thought process through this. And I think that's the biggest thing for coaches is don't get stuck in what you're doing forever because the game changes. You just got to be ready to adapt with it. So I guess that would be my last thought.
I mean, any defense when run effectively can be very, very effective. And like I said, the reason we even got on this conversation with the podcast is Delta High School down in Ohio, they run a heck of a 1-1-3. I mean, and it takes teams just completely out of a lot of their offense. And they've had a nice program. Coach Brighton does a great job down there since he's become the head coach. He hasn't been coaching there very long, but man, they just play really tough, like a physical kind of man-to-man aggressive defense, but it's not man-to-man. It's a 1-1-3, right? And teams seem to have a lot of trouble with it. And because there's a player generally in the middle protecting the paint, those other four players, regardless of how you decide to use them, can be very aggressive. They can, like you said, they can push to the sideline, they can push down to the corner. And we know we automatically have people in a help side position compared to if a team's running five out and man, and a bunch of screens and a bunch of cuts or whatever that might look like, you may second guess for a split second if you got somebody behind you in case you get beat. But, you know, run defenses like this, you know, you got some help. And that just helps you be a little bit more aggressive on the ball. Jeff, anybody that's interested in joining Coach's Edge, you've been one of our very first, you know, or that first group of like 10 or 11 members we had from 2.5-3 years ago, whenever it was. Anything you'd say to them?
I would just get the word out. I think the coaches you got in here are good resources. The biggest, what I appreciate about coaches is they beg, borrow, and steal from each other. And in the basketball world, it's appreciated. And I think we learn a lot from each other. I wish my main job is education. I wish we did a better job of that in education. I guess I'll leave with that. They're knocking on my door. So maybe I've hidden from work quite a bit here.
Thank you for listening to the Coach's Edge podcast. Jeff, thank you for taking the time. To our listeners, get after today.